Welcome to Freshfire's weekly podcast.
Morning, everybody. Hopefully I can be as enthusiastic as the last two announcements. I'll try my best. It was supposed to be Adam this morning speaking, but he's not too well. He texted me at 7:30 this morning and said, "Tig, you're it." So here I am. So if you see me looking down, it's because I can't read my words because I've hastily been writing things down this morning. So when I woke up, as I quite often do, very good. Someone had posted a quote by A.W. Tozer on Instagram, and it says this. It says, "A scared world needs a fearless church." A scared world needs a fearless church. Now, this week I've been looking a little bit in Psalm 23, so I set off thinking, right, I'm going to speak on Psalm 23, but I'm not going to speak on Psalm 23. But just on the back of what he said, I just want to tell you some reasons why we are and need to be that fearless church. So if the Lord is our shepherd this morning, we can be that fearless church. Why? Because he makes us, he leads us, he restores us, he guides us, he protects us, he provides for us, he anoints us, and he follows us. How long for? All the days of our life until we get to heaven. Yes, things may happen to us and we may be ill and whatever, but if the Lord is our shepherd, we'll want for nothing. There's nothing that can happen. He's our shepherd. He's there to provide and all those things. So we can be, knowing that, going into this week, as Brett said, with all this panic and supermarket shelves empty, we can be that fearless church because the Lord is our shepherd and we know all that. Yes, there is a battle still going on, but the war is won. We know that ultimately, don't we? The war is won. So what I want to speak on this morning, and I'll try and be as quick as I can, is reverence and holiness. If you remember last time I spoke, I said more than now ever the Lord said to me, we as a church need to know our Bible moving forward because we need to know the word, not just necessarily in our head, but in our heart so the people can see it. But I believe God has been speaking to me and I think others recently saying that we need to get back some of the reverence for God. And I'm glad we sung that last song because that just sort of fit in with exactly what I want to say. And I believe to get to the next level as Christians, we need to get back some of the reverence that some of our forefathers had. Now, I'm not saying that everybody needs to come to church next week wearing a three-piece suit and all the women wearing hats. And yes, there was something that because the reason why it's called Sunday Best is because people were saving their best clothes for Sunday. And people would say, I'm giving my best for God. I'm dressing the best I can for God. Now, I'm not saying we need to go back to that. And as you can see, I'm certainly not wearing my Sunday best this morning. I think in the modern church, and there's nothing wrong with this, and certainly you've done people who are on Encounter and who've done Encounter, who are doing about the Father's heart. And we talk about God as being daddy. And it seems to me that the church in general, or a lot of the church, is just treating God like a daddy, and it's daddy, daddy, daddy. And yes, there is room for that, and certainly there's places for that, and we need that. But I think we also need to get back some of the reverence, because as a daddy, we can become a little bit too familiar with God and become a little bit irreverent with God because we've not got that reverence and that awe that we need to have. I love the shack. When the shack first came out, I hated it, and I heard all the stories. God is a woman, and this, that, and the other. But for those who've seen the film, if you've not seen the film, get it, but take one or two boxes of tissues because you'll need them. God appears as a woman because the guy can't cope with God being a man. But then at one point when there's a really, really situation, God appears as a man because he needs to have a strong man in that situation. And we need to go back to that reverence. Yes, see God as a daddy, but also be reverent. Now, reverence means to give honour or to give respect. And if you think how you are with your parents or how we are with your parents, quite often, there are daddy or mother, but we don't always give them respect. So if we're treating God we call him daddy all the way through our life, we're not treating him with the respect, then he's not getting the reverence and the awe that he needs or that he desires and wants, and we should be giving him. In 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1, it says, "Therefore, since we have these promises, dear friends, let us purify ourselves from everything that contaminates body and spirit, perfecting holiness out of reverence for God." Perfecting holiness out of reverence for God. And one of the good ways of doing that, and people have been doing it that way, is fasting. Now, you may say fasting, okay, and Adam spoke on fasting, a brilliant message on fasting the other week, just missing a few meals. No, no, for me, fasting is so much more. When I fast, I can pray for hours. When I fast, I can read the Bible without getting bored and distracted and look at my phone and checking sport. Not that it's any good at the moment because there's no sport being played at the moment because of all this virus. But I can go on for hours. I can drive to work and switch the radio off and just pray in tongues all the way to work. Not a problem when I'm fasting. When I'm not fasting, I'm struggling a bit and I'm noticing things and I'll just put the radio on. Fasting gives us that deep connection. And I believe it gives us that deep connection of getting back to into that place how God wants us, so that we can become more reverent. Look at where you are in your life. I don't understand that bit. I can't read my writing. Oh yeah, look at where you are in your life. Don't be just looking to add things into your life. Oh, I need this, I need that, I need to be able to do it. Sometimes, and the Bible talks about that, it talks about throwing off everything that hinders and the sin that easily entangles. And sometimes we need to get rid of stuff. We have so much in our lives and so much, and we come before God with all this baggage and, yeah, I'm going to run this race for you, God, and we've got a big rucksack on and we're doing what? Matt Redman, his song, When the Music Fades, it says, "When the music fades and all is stripped away, and I simply come." And sometimes God is looking for us just to simply come. Just to come before him because he is God. Not to come with a big shopping list of, I've got this problem, I've got that problem, I need this, I need that, I need toilet roll, I need hand sanitizer, I need all these things in my life, and God, please, you know, give it me. We sometimes need to simply just come. And as it says in, I think it's Psalm 46, verse 10, and I might get it wrong, "Be still and know that I am God." No agendas. No, I need you to do that, God, I need breakthrough here. Just being reverent and just seeing God for who he is and just sitting in his presence in quiet and just, thank you, Lord. And getting back some of that awe and reverence that we need. Ecclesiastes 5 verse 2 says this, "God is in heaven, you are on earth, so let your words be few." Yet we come to prayer meetings and we expect that every single minute there's got to be no silence. It needs to be blah, 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 blah. And sometimes that's right. And sometimes, I'm not decrying that, but sometimes we need to just come and recognize who God is, that he's got it all in control, that he's got a plan, that nothing takes him by surprise. Corona's not took God by surprise. Famine doesn't take God by surprise. Cancer doesn't. He is in control, and we just need to come and just be reverent before him and posture ourselves before him. 1 Peter 1 verse 16 says this, "Be holy." Why? "Because I am holy." So God's saying, "I'm holy, and because I'm holy, you be holy." For no other reason. Not to impress your mates, not to impress the leaders or anything like that. Be holy because I am holy. We read in Revelation, don't we, about the elders and how they're just before the throne 24/7, 365, singing holy, holy, holy. There's no script. They're not forced to do it. They don't get paid to do it. Can you imagine the job advert? Wanted someone to say holy, holy, holy every day. If every day, 365, you'd be like, nah, I'm not having that. But why do they do it? Because they sat before God, in the presence of God. And that's all they can sing. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty, because they've experienced that. and they are reverently doing it. They're not doing it because they've been told to do it. You must do that, and you know, like a punishment. You've got to say that until I tell you can come out of there and stop doing that. You've got to do it. It's none of that. They're doing it because they want to do it. They're being reverent before God. The Bible talks about that no one has ever seen the face of God. And in Exodus chapter 33, and verses 21 and 23. Then the Lord said, "There is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I'll put you in the cleft of the rock and cover you with my hand until I've passed. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face you must not see." God is so holy that Moses, we can't stand to be in his presence. And when Moses experienced God and God covered him with his hand in the cleft of the rock, Moses came down from the mountain and he was glowing. They had to put him in a tent and he was glowing. He'd be one of those annoying people who, especially like me, if you like to sleep in the dark, you're trying to get to sleep and someone's got the light on and you can't. That was Moses for days, weeks, months after. Why? Because he'd been in the presence of God. He'd been in the presence of the Holy God and he was shining. He was shining like never before. Face down. Throughout the Bible, we see as people come into contact with the holiness of God, as they come into contact and experience God, that they become face down. Going back to the Old Testament in Genesis, Abraham became face down. Moses became face down. Ezekiel was face down before God, even in the crazy stuff that he was doing. The disciples in Matthew 17 were face down before God. And one of my favorites, or two of my favorites, I'll mention one now and one in a second, was Goliath. Now, if you remember, Goliath on the battlefield has been hurling insults to God, hurling insults to the children of Israel and telling them that they're dogs and stuff like that, and who's your God anyway. And we know the story. David picks up the stone in his sling and throws a stone, and the stone plants in his head. Now, I would have thought that as the giant's running towards David and David hits the stone in his head, that because it's hitting with such a thing, he would fall backwards. But no, the Bible says that Goliath fell face down. He had insulted God. He had thrown insults at God. And in his dying seconds, he fell face down before the God who he had been insulting. Moving quickly on, 1 Samuel chapter 4. Again, we're looking. At that time, just moving on a bit, Eli was still priest, but he'd let his sons, Hophni and Phinehas, I don't know if I pronounced them right, take over the temple, and they slept with the temple girls. They stole from the money out of the temple offering, so they'd be going in the back room now as you're all in here, taking the 20s and putting them in the pockets and maybe leaving the slips. That's what they did. And they were supposed to be leading the people of God spiritually. They were the sons of Eli. And the Philistines and Israelites were at war, as they often were, and thousands of men had been killed. So Hophni and Phinehas said, "I know what we'll do. The presence of God lives in a box. We will get the Ark of the Covenant. We will bring the Ark of the Covenant down to the battlefield and we will put it there, and the Philistines are going to have absolutely no chance. No chance whatsoever." So in 1 Samuel chapter 4, it says that they brought it down. And it says this in verse 5, "When the Ark of the Lord's Covenant came into the camp, all Israel..." Hang on. It's hard when you've got the message on one and you one side and the... I was just about to read from them. Anyway, don't forget that. For those who know my Bible will know what I'm talking about. The Israelites raised such a great shout that the ground shook. Hearing the uproar, the Philistines asked, "What's all this shouting about?" Now, can you imagine if we as a church raised a shout on the whole of Reddish, felt the tremble, or the whole of Manchester felt the tremble? We'd be like, yes, the power of God, they heard a shout. But as we read on in 1 Samuel chapter 4, they went into battle because they got God in his box, the symbol of God in the box. They went into battle the next day, and they won. No, they didn't. 30,000 Israelite soldiers died that day. Why? I'm a crier as well. Because they raised a shout, but their hearts weren't bowed down. See, we can raise a shout, and we sing that song, don't we? My shout is a weapon. We perhaps should change that with those words to my shout could be a weapon. Because unless our hearts are bowed down in reference of God, we can shout all we want, and the ground can shake all its want, but 30,000 are going to get slaughtered. Unless we are face down before a living God, then that is what's going to happen. And as we know, 30,000 got, as this story says, 30,000 got slaughtered, and the Ark of the Covenant was captured and was taken. And this is probably one of my favourite things in the Bible, was taken, and the Philistines put it in the temple right in front of their god Dagon. And they went out to party and celebrate and maybe watch a film. Maybe they watched 1917 or something like that. But they went off and they had a good time. They came the next day and Dagon was face down. So they thought, perhaps Dagon had a few too many in celebration last night and he's ended up face down. Or perhaps he'd been on the Monster. You're on Pepsi Max. I thought it was Monster when I saw it at the back. I thought, oof. Perhaps he'd been on the Monster or the Red Bull or something. So they stand him back up again and they go out to celebrate. They come the next morning. Not only is he face down, but they have to step over his head and his hands, which are in the threshold of the door, and his body is face down. His body is face down. And I just think, wow, what a God. When God talks about coming before him in reverence and fear, perhaps that's what we need to do in trembling instead of stroppy teenager attitude. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to my room, slam, as people do. So God's presence is not in a box anymore. God's presence is in us. So we don't have to wait until Hophni and Phinehas turn up and decide to put the presence of God in a box there and we're going to win the victory. God's presence is in our hearts. We know that we can win the victory because God is with us. And you see, the thing about face down, and you may have seen me do this before, and we are coming into land shortly, is that when you face down, you can't see anything. You can't see the telly. You can't see your kids misbehaving. You can't see Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or whatever everyone's into now. It's just you at the floor, and it's you before a holy God. And we read so much in the Bible, yet we see very little of it in our lives and in the church. And whether that's a physical on a Sunday morning, in fact the carpet stinks, perhaps you don't want to do it. whether that's a physical being face down on the floor or being face down in our hearts, I mean, it talks about circumcising our hearts in other places. It's about positioning ourselves face down before a holy God and being undignified, which is my last title. Undignified. See, when, if you read on in Samuel, going up to 2 Samuel, which we're going to look at in a minute, the presence of God in the ark brought pain and misery to the Philistines to such an extent that they sent it back. And if you want to read how they sent it back and how the ark got back, is just amazing. But it landed, not at Jerusalem, but it landed in some of the outskirts. And it ended up, it was in one person's house, for about 3 years, and then the other person's house for a few months. And do you know what happened when it was in those people's houses for that time? They were blessed. Absolutely blessed. But not just they were blessed, the family was blessed. The whole family was blessed because the presence of God in a box was in their house. And yet we have the presence of God in our hearts. But we miss out on a lot of blessing. Why? Because we're not perhaps as reverent and as holy with God. God is there and he's wanting to do all these things. And I've said before, we sometimes miss out on so much because we want to do it our way. We want to be like Frank Sinatra and, you know, did it my way. But eventually, and I'm skipping out a lot there, eventually the ark ended up with David, and David brought it back. And in Psalm 24, verses 7 to 10, it says this, and this was written about when David took the Ark of the Covenant back into Jerusalem. It says, lift up your head, you gates. Be lifted up, you ancient doors, that the King of Glory may come in. And this was all about the fact that he'd recaptured the Ark and it was coming back through the gates of Jerusalem. And this is what he's writing. Who is this King of Glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your head, you gates. Lift them up, you ancient doors, that the King of Glory may come in. Who is he, this King of Glory? The Lord Almighty. He is the King of Glory. So David's got the ark and he writes that. And he comes in to Jerusalem and he's dancing with his ephod on. Now, if you wonder what an ephod is, the ephod was a linen garment which was worn by the priests. So the king would wear that under his kingly things, so people would recognize him as king because of his garments. So he had his linen ephod and priest, and he was dancing. And all Jerusalem was out dancing, apart from one person, Michal, who was David's wife, who was watching from a window upstairs. And you can just imagine her looking at a watch, waiting for him to come in, and he must be finished now, and then comes in, and she's like, where have you been then? Oh, I've just been dancing for God. Okay. Spare room for you, my son. I've seen you dancing with those young maidens. I've seen you dancing with those young girls. You're not coming near me. You need to show more respect. You've just humiliated yourself. And what does David say in 2 Samuel 6 and 16 to 22? Talks about offerings, and he says... It says that Michal saw David dancing and she despised him in her heart. And then when David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, came out to meet him and said, how the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of the slave girls of his servants as any vulgar fellow would. David said to Michal, it was before the Lord who chose me rather than your father or anyone else from this house when he anointed me ruler over the Lord's people. I will celebrate before the Lord and I will become even more undignified than this. Na, 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 hey. That's it. That's a New Living Translation, that bit. But David got God. He got what it was all about. And I talked to you at the start about being reverent before God. And I believe the more reverent we become, the more undignified we'll be. The more reverent we are before God, and the more we recognize God who is holy, the more undignified we will become as a church. And I sometimes wonder what it would be like. I mean, today's worship was, I just thought, amazing. The atmosphere in the room was so charged and it was fantastic. But some weeks I sit there and I think, we need to move the chairs out. You see, we all have a Michael. We all have a Michael. It could be someone in your family. I can't dance before while my mum's here or my dad's here. Or I can't raise my hands whilst my best friend's here because, what are they going to think of me? Might be a voice in our head which is saying, don't be a prat. Dancing before God, and the enemy will whisper. But we all have a Michael, and it's not just in worship where we all have a Michael, but we all have a Michael who needs to be slain in our lives. Yeah, Jezebel, we're on about Jezebel being slain, but we all need to get rid of the Michaels in our lives and forget about what other people think, because it's not about what other people think. It's what the God who created the universe, who sustains us, it's what he thinks. And it's all for his glory and it's all for his praise that we do it. Nothing to do with the person sat next to us, what they're going to think. If you want to come to the front and dance and wave flags, you're doing it for God. You're not doing it for anybody else. And perhaps we need to get rid of the chairs and put them to the side. And let's be undignified for God one Sunday morning after being, becoming reverent before him. And as I say, it doesn't just apply to worship. Because I know people can dance, because I've seen videos of them dancing on Instagram or people have sent me. And I know people get excited because I've seen them at concerts and football matches. And yet I see the same people in churches and they sat on their hands and I think, why? You can dance for the devil, but what about dancing for God? You know? But as I said, it started with, to get to the next level, I think we need to recapture some of that reverence for God. Not an unhealthy reverence, but a holy reverence for God. Knowing who he is, knowing that he's the one who is in control. Look through the Bible and just see everything that he's done. Hear testimonies, see what everything's done, that he's done, and just go face down before him. Let's stand.